And now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for this evening. Let's give a warm welcome to Linda G. from San Diego.
Thank you. My name's Linda and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm grateful to be here and I'm grateful I'm sober. And congratulations to the people who took cakes and the 90-day token. That's awesome. You know, one thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, it's like I can relate to people. You know, when I was out there drinking, I had a very difficult time relating to people, you know, even the people I drank with. But for some reason, after coming to AA, and it doesn't matter, we can come from like all different walks of life or whatever, but, you know, when it comes to the drinking or the feelings, it's like I have found people I can relate to. And to me, that's an awesome feeling because, you know, I just always felt like I was way out there and I was way different. And, you know, I have a lot in common with the 10-minute speaker. You know, I too came from a very dysfunctional family and my childhood was just all about fear. My mom's husband was a rageaholic and he was very abusive. When we were real young, like 5, 6 years old, he was physically abusive, like he would hit us and stuff like that. And for some reason, he stopped that. But he was always very verbally and emotionally abusive. And he was sexually abusive. And, you know, my brother and I were literally just terrified all the time. I can remember being something like 10 years old, and it was about time for him to come home. And for a period of time, it's like I would just start shaking. You know, like when it was about time for him to come home, I'd start shaking, and I'd just be pacing the house, and I'd just be like, ah, you know. And that was, I don't know, that's just the way it was. And my first drink, I was in 8th grade, and I couldn't sleep one night, and I got up and I got a can of beer out of the refrigerator. And neither my mom nor her husband were, you know, really heavy drinkers, but, you know, they had some in case company came by or whatever. And so I got this can of beer out of the fridge, and I sat in my bed and I drank it. And it was like I found the answer. It's like, this is it. And seriously, I wondered why people weren't drunk all the time. You know, I decided I wanted to be. It was fantastic. I just felt warm and relaxed and happy, and it was awesome. And I got kicked out of school the next day for drinking. You know, I believe I was an alcoholic from the get-go. Very rarely, like, you know, my friends would find bottles of beer or we'd go get somebody to buy us beer or whatever, and very rarely would I drink that the way my friends did. You know, very rarely would I sip. You know, usually I was guzzling. And I just, you know what, just went for it. When I was 12, I told my mom what her husband was doing, and you know, she just, like, didn't do anything, and it continued. And when I was 14, I went to live with my dad. I was getting kicked out of school again, like, the third time. I was in the beginning of 9th grade by then. I was doing all this acting out. Nobody knew it at the time. I didn't know it, but, you know, it was just from all the abuse and everything that was going on, I was just acting out. And getting kicked out of school again, and I went to live with my dad, who was a cop, and his new wife. And that was pretty uncomfortable. You know, here I was like, you know, the freak was the big thing in school back then. You know, you were a freak. I had the frizzy hair and, you know, hung out with the pot smokers and, you know, real often didn't wear shoes around the school and, you know, things like that. And I just wanted to be like a little hippie. And, of course, that was absolutely not, you know, appropriate for them. And they let me know it. And they didn't like anything about the way I dressed or the way I wore my hair. And it just kind of seemed like nothing about me was acceptable. You know what? I just obviously was not okay. You know, I mean, look what my mom's husband did. You know, I told my mom. She didn't do anything about it. You know, for some reason, I wasn't worth protecting. It was okay to let that stuff happen to me. And, you know, all the verbal abuse and stuff like that, it's like, that was very obvious to other people because he just did it at any time. You know, and it just seemed like, well, see, you know, it must be okay. You know, nobody's stopping it. And so something must have been wrong with me. And, let's see. After I went to live with my dad after about a year, I was getting kicked out of school again. So I was sent to a reformatory. And I was 15 at that time. And I just stayed until I was 18. You know, I stayed there because I could isolate. And, you know what, I didn't have to talk to anybody. Nobody really talked to me. I was just left alone, and I was safe. I was safe there. And, you know what, I just got obsessive with my schoolwork. I just jumped into my schoolwork, and, you know, that was another way for me to isolate. It gave me something to occupy me so I didn't have to think about things. You know what, it made me feel good. I did almost 4 years of high school in 2 years, you know, because they were like a progressive thing. And you worked on your own, because when I started the 10th grade, when I first went into this reformatory, I had like one and a half credits from my freshman year. And I came real close to being able to graduate when I was a junior. You know. So anyway, the point was I just isolated and obsessed with my schoolwork. And when I got out from there, I went back home to live with my mother. And, you know, I had changed a lot, actually, in the time I was there. I changed somewhat, at least. And, you know, instead of being so hateful and angry towards my mom's husband, you know, I thought, you know what, I'm going to let it go. I don't want to be the reason we're not a family. You know what, it's in the past, and we're beyond that, and we'll be a family. And so I went in just like, I was naive. I totally naive. You know what, I had changed, but he hadn't changed. And he ended up raping me, you know, because I just went in with my guard down, acting like everything was peachy keen. And I'd actually been drinking quite a bit before then. But, of course, you know, with that, my drinking really took off. You know, I was just, like, devastated and so messed up and screwed up and just drank. I started working in bars when I was 18 because my roommate would sneak me into a bar after I moved out from my mom's house. My roommate would sneak me into the bar. And, you know, it just happened they were looking to hire somebody. And anyway, I got a job in a bar, and I was cocktailing at night. Then I started attending bar during the day. And, you know, anytime I had time off, I was hanging out in the bars. My whole life was in bars. And, let's see. I don't know, I just drank a hell of a lot. And I thought I was having a really good time. And that continued for a while. And you know, at first I couldn't control my drinking at all. You know, I was falling down drunk very easily. And you know, after a while, I could drink a lot, you know. And I ended up living with bikers, and they'd take me to the bars with them, and they'd make bets on me, you know, how much I could drink and stuff. And, you know, I'd get up in the morning, and I'd fix myself Bloody Marias, which was like V8 and tequila. And I'd go through almost a fifth before I went to work in the morning, you know. And, you know, I'd work in a bar, and I'd drink a little bit more during the day. I really couldn't drink much more than that. And life just went on like that. Until I really got tired of the bar scene and being in bars, and I tried different things. I actually worked at a couple little fast food restaurants. I tried truck driving for a little while. And, you know what, I just always wound up working in bars again. It's like there was a pool or a draw or something, you know. And but it got to the point where I didn't want to go to bars on my days or my nights off. All I wanted to do was stay at home and drink with the blinds shut, the door locked, and my bottle of vodka. That's all I wanted. And you know what? I thought I was happy at that time. You know, I thought I'd get my bottle and I'd sit on the couch and I'd be like, okay, this is cool. All right, you know, I got it going on. And, you know, but I was still so full of fear and anxiety. And I knew I was an alcoholic, but I didn't know what it meant to be an alcoholic. You know, I didn't really understand how serious, you know, alcoholism is. And, I try and do this self-help thing or self-therapy thing. And, like, I'd heard somewhere that people become angry when they realize they're an alcoholic. You know, and I wasn't angry. I didn't care. So I'm an alcoholic. I deserve to drink. You know what? I work hard. I pay my bills. I pay my rent. I deserve to drink. You know, what's the problem with that? So I remember I'd be sitting there in my kind of drunk stupor thinking, you know, well, maybe I'm not angry about being an alcoholic because I haven't internalized it. So I'd sit there and tell myself, I am an alcoholic. I am an alcoholic. And, of course, it didn't take long. That was, like, pretty boring. So then it was like, I am an alcoholic. I'll drink to that. You know? And I did. You know? yeah. And, you know, things, it's kind of weird because from the time I first started drinking until not too long before I hit my bottom, my life actually improved and got better. I hung out with, like, on the street. I was kind of on the street when I was 18. Things just improved. I before I hit my bottom, I wound up going to a school to be a medical assistant. You know, I managed to graduate. And then my drinking, I don't know, just my ability to drink, I guess, actually, is what the problem was. My ability to drink started decreasing. You know, I'd been a functional alcoholic for 10 years. I drank every day for 10 years. I drank when I rolled out of bed in the morning. You know, I had to have my bottle of vodka to get out of bed. I can remember I'd wake up and the first thought going through my head would be like, oh, shit, I did it again. And, I'd lie there and I just felt so sick physically. And, my head was pounding, my stomach was upset. And emotionally, I would just be humiliated. You know, the things I could remember, I was just like, oh, my God. And I'd just lie there in anguish over that. And then I'd try and remember the stuff that was blacked out, I'd just be so full of remorse, and I think I can't keep doing this. I've got to stop doing this. And somewhere I'd heard the phrase, you don't control your drinking controls you. And I knew that applied to me. You know, and I remember one time even thought about praying and asking God for help. But at that point, I kind of felt like I'd fallen off the radar. Because when I'd gone to church as a kid, it was a church that preached hellfire and brimstone and, you're a sinner and you're bad and there's nothing good about you and, women can't wear pants and you can't listen to rock music. And I just wanted nothing to do with that. And I was really afraid of God. And, so I kind of felt like, like I said, I'd fallen off the radar. And if I started to pray now, he'd be like, oh, you, and be angry at me. And so I was really afraid to pray. And things got worse from there. Well, let's see, kind of sticking with that part of the story. I'd lie there in bed feeling so horrible and remorse, and finally I'd get up and I'd go check my car because I couldn't really remember driving home. And it's like, okay, there's no ding dents or blood. So that was a big relief. I'd be like, okay, I'm not doing that again. And, after lying there for hours, going through all that agonizing, and I am just not doing it again. And I get my bottle of vodka, and I think, I'm not going to drink like I did yesterday. I'm not going to get as drunk as I did yesterday. And sure enough, I'd wake up in the morning and go, oh, shit, I did it again. And shortly after that, my fiancé kicked me out of the apartment. I'd started losing jobs because of my drinking. I worked in bars. And, they said, you're not supposed to drink at work. And, what they really meant was just don't make it obvious. They got to the point where I couldn't really hide it anymore. I couldn't really function as an alcoholic. I had 2 DUIs. It's kind of funny. I didn't care that I had 2 DUIs. It didn't mean anything to me. It was a joke. My first one, I blew a 3.4, and, my friends made a big joke out of it. I was at work one night and, tending the bar, and turned around, and they were all holding signs up like, you know, 3.4, 3.3, you know, kind of like what shows that where they do the judging and they hold the signs up with the points and, you know, like telling me how good I was doing and, you know, that was my score. And the next time I got a DUI, I blew it to a 0.9, and I was actually disappointed because that was less than the first, you know. You know, I just didn't care. And today I'm, like, so grateful that I never hurt anybody when I was drinking and driving. You know, I think about that now, and it's like, oh, my goodness, I am so grateful. Let's see, I got arrested for assault, which was totally due to drinking. And then after my fiancé kicked me out, I came here to San Diego. Thank you. I came here to San Diego, and I was working in bars and using my tips to pay my hotel bill, and, you know, I'd done that before, and that was really, like, no big deal. But it got to the point where I couldn't control my drinking enough to make it to work. You know, they started sending me home from work because I was too drunk while I was there, and, you know, I tried really, really, really hard to control my drinking, you know, so I could make it to work. You know, just, you know, 8 hours, just drink enough that, you know, okay, I can hang in at work for 8 hours and then come home and drink. But I couldn't. You know, I remember I would do things like I'd take a drink and I'd put my bottle in a suitcase and put that suitcase in a larger suitcase and I'd have them all zipped up and everything and I'd stick them in the closet and then I'd go to get in the shower so I could start getting ready for work. And, you know, I'd have shampoo in my hair and stuff like that and I'm getting out of the shower to go into the closet to get the suitcases out so I can get some more vodka. You know, and I knew I needed to be extremely careful, and I had to make it to work, you know, because if I didn't, you know, what was going to happen? But, you know, it came to the point where I wasn't making it to work, and they kicked me out of the hotel. And I was sitting on a bus bench going, how did this happen to me? You know, I've always been able to take care of myself. How did I wind up here? No, no money, no place to go. I'm on the street. How did this happen? You know, I remember I was sitting there thinking about it all. You know, my ex-fiance kicking me out, and my health was being affected, not seriously, but, you know, like I had huge black bruises all the time, and I'd get these nosebleeds where I literally had to use bath towels. And I would just think about these different things that was happening. It's like, how did this happen? You know, and I thought it was a streak of bad luck. Let's see. I knew, you know, with my history of abuse as a kid that, you know, I was thinking about how I was going to take care of myself on the street and the things I was going to have to do. And with my history, I knew I would have to be, like, extremely, extremely drunk, and I knew that that wouldn't work. You know, it's like, you can get the money from me too easy, and anyway, I'm not going to go into details, but I just knew it wouldn't work. And I was terrified. I was terrified. And I wound up going to detox. I went down to 1111 Island Street just to have a safe place to stay. And they, you know, when I heard somebody say that an alcoholic never regains control of their drinking, I decided I wasn't an alcoholic. You know, my problem was I just hadn't, you know, I drank every day. I just needed to dry out for a couple days and then I'd be all right. And, you know, people would share about, you know, what they'd gone through and, you know, yeah, I think, you know what? I'm not like them. I hadn't gone through what they went through. You know, their story's bad. You know, they went through a lot. I didn't. But then someone from the H&I panel came in, and they were talking about the desperation they felt when they needed a drink and the things they went through to get a drink. And I could relate to that. And something clicked in my head, and it's like, oh, okay, I'm an alcoholic. But I thought I was less of an alcoholic, you know, because once again, I just didn't hit the bottom like these people had. You know, back then, detox lasted like 3 days, I think, and they had a program called 7-Day. And I went into 7-Day just because I still had no place to go. And people there would talk about the progressiveness of alcoholism. And I could relate to that. I could see that in my life. I could see how my life had gone downhill and my drinking had gotten worse. And then I realized I wasn't going to be able to drink and be okay. And I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know anything. I'd never been to an AA meeting before I wound up in detox. I too kind of thought it was a cult, or this is where people went when no one else would hang out with them, you know. And I didn't like the talk of God. I didn't want anything to do with God. But once I realized I could not drink and be okay, once I could see the progressiveness in my life and knew I needed help, I became real, real willing. You know, I was willing to do whatever it took. I didn't believe AA was really going to work for me because I was kind of different from most people. You know, what worked for most people tended to not work for me. But, you know, I thought, well, if I really try this for a little while, maybe I won't drink for a while, you know, which is better than nothing. I had nothing to lose as far as, you know, I was concerned. And from the seven-day program, I went into a women's recovery home. And, you know, I was amazed when they said, you know, there's a 90-day requirement. We ask that you commit to staying 90 days. I was like, wow, you know, that just seemed like forever. And, you know, I started going to meetings, and I got a sponsor, and I started working the steps to the best of my ability. You know, I just started doing the things they suggested. I started writing in a journal and, you know, doing service work. I'd pick up ashtrays or, you know, whatever, set up chairs. And, you know, 90 days came. When I was in the recovery home, it's like, you know, I can leave now, but I didn't want to. I was feeling good about what I was doing, and I decided I liked being sober. And, you know, going through the steps, you know, when I did the first step, it wasn't hard for me to admit I was powerless over alcohol because, you know, looking back, I kind of realized that. You know, way back when I'd wake up and agonize, you know, and think about the things I'd done the night before, and I had that thought, I don't control my drinking controls me. You know, so it wasn't hard for me to come to grasp with being powerless. But I didn't really think my life was unmanageable, you know, because once again, it just didn't seem like I'd gone through what everyone else had gone through. And, you know, for me, that came very slowly. I did work the steps to the best of my ability. I wrote things as thoroughly as I could. But, you know, I guess it was like more was revealed later. You know, it took a long time for me to recognize the incomprehensible demoralization in my life. You know, I'd hear people talk about it. And, you know, I'd think about my life. And it's like, nope, I didn't suffer from incomprehensible demoralization. You know, nothing like that happened to me. And, you know, one day when I had about 2.5 years, it's just kind of like this light bulb went off in my head. And it's like, oh, no, I did. That was incomprehensible demoralization, you know. All the memories of everything was there. It's just like I couldn't put the label on the memory or something, you know. I guess, you know, denial, insanity. Let's see, where was I going? And, you know, for a higher power. You know, like I said, at first I didn't want anything to do with a higher power. I was terrified. But I really, really, really did not want to drink. And, you know, people in AA talked about doing God's will and stuff like that. And, you know, first I got to looking around. It's like, you know what, these people aren't like the people in the church I went to, you know. I mean, it's like they're not that overboard or, you know, that fanatical. And I wasn't sure what to think about that. That was kind of scary and kind of a relief at the same time. But, you know, I started praying, and my prayers at first were just like, I don't know what's going on. I don't want to make you mad. I just don't want to drink. You know, whatever it is, just help me to not drink. Help me to do what you want me to do. And, you know, when I had, I don't know, 2.5, not even that much, maybe 1.5 years sober, I was sitting in bed one day reading my meditation book, and it was talking about our concept of God. And it just hit me how much my concept of God had changed. You know, and it was just through working the steps, going to meetings, listening to others share, and reaching out to my higher power that, you know, I now had this new concept of God. And you know, my concept today is God is a very loving God and very forgiving God and generous. And, you know, it says in the big book, I'm forgetting pretty much the exact wording of it. Our needs will be met. Our needs will always be met. You know what? I found that to be true in my life. It hasn't mattered what it is, what I need. I've always had it, in sobriety. I remember one time I thought I needed something. I was going through a real difficult time, and I thought I needed support from other alcoholics, and nobody, really reached out or did anything. And this stinking thinking went off in my head, and I was like, oh, see, this is just, it's not true. It's not real. And then it hit me. It's like, well, you know what, Linda? You didn't really need that after all. There have just been so many different times in my life where, maybe it's kind of a big thing, maybe it's kind of a small thing, maybe it was financial, maybe it was emotional support, but things have always worked out. And, the thing for me is, after I got sober, I had a real hard time with anxiety and fear. I was just like so full of fear and just always knotted up inside, just worrying about, what's going to happen, And, I can remember I'd be sitting on my couch. After I got out of the recovery home, I'm sitting on my couch in my apartment. And I'm worrying about losing my job. What's going to happen if I lose my job? Well, I'm going to lose my apartment. I'm going to lose all my furniture. But really, we're shed. I'm going to wind up back on the street again. And my head is just running and running and running. And you know what? Really, there wasn't any reason for me to be concerned about losing my job. I was just spinning, I would sit there and try and think, the cliches of the program, and I'd try and find comfort in them. And it didn't work. I just, no matter what I thought, it didn't calm the anxiety or the fear. But what I found was when something actually was going on, I wasn't just in my head projecting, then I could have, peace and serenity while whatever was going on. The big book says God will allow us to, God will grant us serenity to match calamity as much as we allow him. So as long as I'm not just in my head projecting about something going on, if something's really going on, I had this weird thing going on with my eyes. I thought I was going to lose my eyesight. The doctors couldn't figure out. I was going through all kinds of tests. I didn't have any medical insurance. And the doctor's like, I don't know what it is, and to me that was rather scary, and this went on for a period of months, and I'm kind of rambling now, I'm sorry, but my needs were met through all of that. My eyesight, I'm blind in my right eye, but I do fine, it's okay, with that talk, well, I'm sorry, there's so many different things I want to share about. It's they're all bouncing around in my head. That situation, it was like I said, I didn't have health insurance. And so I didn't know how I was going to pay for all these tests the doctors told me I would need. And what I found out was, my doctor told me to go to UCSD. They're the best priced. And then what I found out was, if I called them and say, how much is the test? I don't have insurance. Then they bill me differently than if I did have insurance and I actually had to pay less. So I started doing that. And I called to find out about this one test that my doctor said I needed, and it was a lot. It would take up pretty much my whole paycheck. And I had just moved out from my roommate's place, and I just got my own apartment for the first time. I was going to live by myself sober. And I didn't have anything in the refrigerator. It was bare. The cupboards were bare. And I'm finding out this test that I need is going to take up my entire paycheck. It literally would have left $10. For me to buy food, gas, cat food, things for my cat, stuff like that. And so I thought, well, I'm going to have to wait to take this test. I can't do it right now. And my doctor called me up and he's like, I don't have those results. And I said, well, I can't do the test right now. And he's like, he got pretty perturbed and he's like, you need to have that test and you go do it now. So, I sat there, I was thinking about it and I thought, put first things first, trust God, your needs will be met. So I decided I'll go in and have the test. And I'd already checked to see if I could be billed for it. Because if I could pay for it 2 weeks later, that'd be fine, because I'd have another paycheck by then, and I could buy groceries and everything I needed with, you know, the paycheck I was just going to get. But, you know, they told me, no, we can't bill you later. You have to pay now. So I went in. I went in real early in the morning before work, and, you know, I filled out the paperwork for this test, and I pulled out my checkbook to pay for it. And the gal told me, you know what, I'm from the temp pool. This is my first day here. No one's trained me yet. I'm going to have to bill you. You know, things like that happen, you know. I can just think of all kinds of different things throughout my life where, you know, sober life, well, whether it's a job, a situation I'm in, whatever, it just, you know, my higher power is just taking care of me. And you know, when I first got sober, like I said, I was so full of fear and anxiety and, you know, going through a couple things and finding out that, you know, as long as I'm sober and I'm really trying to work the program and stick with the program, I'm going to be okay. You know, I may not get what I want. I may not like what's happening. I might be in pain. It might really suck. But you know what? I'm going to be okay. You know, once I really came to know that, you know what? It became much easier for me to really turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And I was so sick and tired of all the fear and anxiety, and I wanted peace so bad, you know, that just made it easier for me, you know. So it's like, as I go through my life today, you know, whatever decisions I have to make, you know, whatever it is, I just like, okay, I'm going to do it your way. What do you want me to do? And you know what? Life is always okay. And you know, there have been things like where I was an office manager in this one job, and the boss was extremely difficult, and I was putting in a ton of overtime, and he had another person working in the office, but, you know, he'd hire somebody, they'd quit, he'd hire somebody, they'd quit, and I was, like, doing the jobs of both people, and he didn't quite get that. And, you know, finally, it was like I knew he was going to fire me, you know, and it came to the point where I just had enough, and I resigned, and he fired me. I gave him my letter that I was quitting. He's like, okay, you're fired. Get out. And you know what? That is so unlike me to quit it when I don't already have another job lined up. But I knew that I needed to take care of myself. I needed to take care of my emotional sobriety. I didn't need to put up with, you know, like verbal abuse or the type of, you know, kind of stuff he was doing. And you know what? I prayed about it. And, you know, I was really praying. I really wanted to pray. Don't let him fire me. Don't have him fire me. I don't want to be fired, you know. But instead, I just said, help me to do this your way. Help me to do this your way. Whatever you want, help me to do this your way. So anyway, that job ended. The very next day, I went to a temp agency, and that was on a Friday that I went to the temp agency, and they placed me at a position, the very next Monday. It was a temp position, but I was only there like 4 months, and they hired me on, and it was the best company I'd ever worked for. You know what, they paid for me to go to school, they paid me for me to go to the University of Phoenix, and it was just awesome. It was awesome. And I worked there for 6 years, and then I quit so I could move to Hawaii. And, you know, once again, before I moved to Hawaii, I was praying, you know what do you want me to do? Help me to do your will, whatever you want me to do. And same thing when I moved back from Hawaii. It's like, what do you want me to do? Help me to do your will, whatever you want me to do. And so today I have a lot of peace and happiness, and life's been really good. Let's see. Yeah, I'm an obsessive person, and, you know, like I said, I just kind of like threw myself into the program. You know, I didn't really believe, but really just didn't want things to be the way they were. And, you know, today I know the program works. And I've not had to drink in over 18 years. And, you know, it's not because I've always worked this perfect program. My higher power has just seen fit to keep me sober. I'm extremely grateful. And, you know what, I believe if I get away from this program, I'm going to wind up drinking. You know, I have self-knowledge. I know, you know, what my life was like before I got sober. You know, I do believe that alcoholism is progressive. I've witnessed that in my own life. And, you know, it's progressed over the last 18 years, and I'm going to be in a world of hurt if I pick up a drink again. But you know what? That's not enough to prevent me from picking up a drink again. You know, the book says we're granted a daily reprieve contingent on our spiritual maintenance. And, you know, I believe that's why I'm sober. You know, but for the grace of God, you know, there go I. I don't know, life's good today. I'm happy. I'm very, very happy. I've got a lot of peace. I've got a lot of hope. You know, there's a lot of things that I still need to work on and improve on. But it's like, that's okay. I have hope today that it'll improve. You know, no matter what's going on in my life, if something's not good, I have hope. You know, and like I said, I can know I'll be okay as long as I, you know, work my program, just do my best to work my program and maintain my conscious contact with my higher power, I'll be okay. And, you know, life today is just a blast. I thought I had fun, you know, like when I first started drinking, I thought that was fun. And, you know, I guess in some ways it was, you know, running around and hanging out in bars and partying and dancing and all that stuff. But, you know what, I think I've really learned about fun and sobriety. You know what, I've traveled, I've gone on a couple cruises, like I said, I moved to Hawaii, I've learned to surf. You know, I just, a lot of things are just a kick in the pants to me. You know, I just have a lot of fun, and, you know, just doing everyday things too. And, you know, right now I'm studying for the CPA exam, and that just blows me away. You know, because it's like, that's not me. You know, that's definitely not who I was. You know, like when I first got here, I didn't think I had a brain. I worked in bars because I thought I was stupid. You know, I didn't think I could have a job in an office and interact with, you know, people in an office. You know, and it's not, it is definitely not something that I would have picked. You know, it's like, I just took the next indicated step. Not my sobriety. You know, like I said, I'd gotten a medical assistant diploma. And when I first got sober, I started looking for work as a medical assistant. And, you know, I worked really, really, really hard at getting a job as a medical assistant, and it just never panned out. And then somebody called the recovery home I was in, and they said, you know what, well, we need somebody to answer the phones at our plumbing company. And so the staff told me about the position. I thought, well, okay, I'll do that. You know, that'll just get me until I do find a job as a medical assistant. And I was there a couple of months, and there was an opening in the accounting department, and the boss said, well, I want you to go into the accounting department. And I'm like, uh-uh. No way. You have no idea. I'm horrible at math. I hate math. I can't stand it. I'll mess it up. You have no idea. And he said, I think you'll be okay. And so I started doing the accounts receivable, and I found out I could do it, and I found out I liked it. And you know what? It's just, things just moved on from there. You know what? You know, I think because I started saying things like, "How am I to do it your way? Whatever you want me to do." You know, I've got this wonderful life today that I would not have dreamed for myself. You know, and I'm just extremely happy and I'm extremely grateful. I heard somebody share in a meeting once how our thoughts and our ideas, our plans for ourselves, are limited by our own knowledge. You know, but what God has planned for us isn't limited by anything. And I believe that. And I guess that's all I have to share, so thanks.